This week on the show, the Red Sox get bitten in the Bronx. LeBron's got a new home once again, and it's 4th of July week. Hope everybody's enjoying the holiday. We've got your poolside listening right here. Calling It starts right now. Hey, everybody, welcome to the show. This is the Calling It podcast, the week of July 2nd, 4th of July week, but there are no days off on the show, at least not for me. Alex Lebowitz, second week in a row, he is not here. Jake Asman is our co-host today. A lot of New York teams in the storyline, so Jake, it worked out well that Lebowitz is once again playing hooky.
No Lebowitz, but I'm excited to be here. I'm an avid listener to the podcast, so anytime I get a chance to co-host the podcast, it is a great honor.
Jake hosts is the co-host of the Asman and Budick Show on Sports on the Go One in New York. So you can check them out online. And if you are in New York, I don't know how many of our listeners outside of you, Jake, are down there. But if you are, feel free to tune in. The Red Sox, I don't know if they're still in New York right now. I would imagine they got out as quick as possible after last night's game, an 11-1 shellacking. That was really less of a game and more of just a David Price bowel movement in front of 35,000 people in New Yankee Stadium. Jake, we talked on your show. I was on the Asman and Budick Show on Friday. We talked about David Price's kind of history with the Yankees. And watching that game, I'd love to get the Yankees fans' perspective on this, because at least for me, yes, it was upsetting, but I was by no means surprised. I was working a little spinners game. I turned my phone on. In about the third inning, I got done, and I kind of saw what had happened. I saw the score. I saw the home runs. I was like, yeah, all right. I mean, it sucks, but, you know, I'm not shocked. I'm not surprised. This is more or less what we expected. But, I mean, for you guys, I know Gary Sanchez, who really is the bane of David Price's existence, but was there any surprise in New York that happened?
Not even in the slightest. And it was so funny because every Yankee fan – yeah, we were making the jokes. Oh, is David Price even going to start this game? Is he going to come up with a phantom injury, the carpal tunnel, Yankee phobia syndrome, whatever you want to call it? And the fact that he does get on the mound, and it's not even like he gets a chance to get settled in and try and, you know, dispel the narrative that he can't pitch well against the Yankees. I mean, it was instant right away. Second at bat, Judge hits a home run. Later in the inning, Gleyber Torres goes deep, and the game was essentially over in the first inning with Severino going on the mound for the Yankees. And it was basically what we saw in Saturday's game because, you know, the Yankees version of David Price this year has been Sonny Gray, who's been terrible. But the big difference is the Red Sox are paying David Price a hell of a lot more money than the Yankees are with Sonny Gray, who will be a free agent at the end of next year, and they could easily trade him in the offseason if they choose to go in that direction. So, you know, you look at this series as a whole. Friday night, it wasn't really a competitive game. The Yankees took care of business with CeCe on the mound. Saturday, the Red Sox, as we just talked about, lit up Sonny Gray. And then, you know, in last night's game, the game was essentially over in the first inning. So as important as this series was, we've never really got that close Yankee-Red Sox, you know, late inning type of back and forth game that we were expecting to get this weekend.
But it wasn't, you know, on Saturday you had, it was J.D. Martinez doing damage. It was Andrew Benintendi doing damage. It was Mookie Betts doing damage. I feel like there's some level of respect in that for Sonny Gray. He was throwing to better hitters. Last night you had Aaron Hicks hit three home runs. Hicks isn't a bad player, but he's not a guy that should be hitting three home runs, two of them off Price. Kyle, they kept calling him Higgy on ESPN on the broadcast. Higashioka, those were his first three career hits, right? Or his first career hit was the home run off of Price.
It was, which is amazing. He did not have a batting average yet. In the last 3 years, he's kind of been like the third string catcher the Yankees have called up from the minor leagues. His story is really interesting. He's like a 28-year-old minor leaguer that's finally getting the opportunity to get some playing time due to all the injuries the Yankees have had at catcher with Sanchez on the DL. Romine's been banged up. So, Kyle Higashioka, I can't even pronounce his name, he's finally getting the opportunity to play a little bit. And, you know, his first career hit is his second deck bomb at Yankee Stadium off David Price. Pretty funny. But so funny for Yankee fans, I should say. I don't know how you people in Boston, you people in Boston probably didn't love it.
No, I mean, we're laughing about it just because, like, if it had been anybody else, we wouldn't be happy, but it's David Price. And it's, like, there's some schadenfreude in it. There is some, I think, and maybe this is just Boston fans, there is something in seeing Price go out and do that and knowing we've been right. I've been saying for weeks, yeah, he's pitched great against okay teams. We'll see how he does in New York. And that's kind of what the mood around Boston had been. And if it's not, if you actually expected him to go out last night and pitch well, you're kidding yourself. Nobody expected that. That was terrible. But nobody, you're lying yourself if you thought that he was going to go out and throw 7-8 innings of one run ball. That was never going to happen. But the way it happened, the guys he gave up the home runs to, it's concerning. And you can't help. And Jake, I'm sure they're doing this in New York, and it's two completely different stories on this Monday. You can't help but look at the series, and the Red Sox and Yankees won't play again until after the trade deadline. They'll play middle of August, I believe it is, and then they play the last three games of the season, which it's looking like the playoffs are essentially going to start the last week of September for the Red Sox.
Well, Alex, they play 13 times.
I may have missed another series.
Right. No, you're right that they play again in August after the trade deadline. Yeah. And then they actually play six games, the final 13 games of the season in September. So three of them will be at Yankee Stadium. And then the final three games of the year, as you know, are at Fenway to wrap up the year, of course. So, you know, the division could either be in hand by then for either team, or those final three games, or really the final six games in the last 13 days, could make or break the standings. But getting back to what you said about David Price, you know, I did a show this morning here in New York, and we were talking about his numbers against the Yankees. How about this stat? I mean, this is borderline absurd. In his last five starts that he has made at Yankee Stadium as a member of the Red Sox, he's 0-5 with a 10.44 ERA. He's given up 10 home runs, and this is just in 25 innings. You know, we're only talking about 25 innings pitched and five starts. I mean, the Yankees offense just owns him for whatever the case may be. And if he can't pitch well against the Yankees and he can't pitch well in the playoffs, I mean, what good is he as a member of the Red Sox making over $30 million a year? It's absurd.
He's not. And that's the point I was getting to. So, again, you have the six games in the last 13 days and then the series in August. I would assume the division's still going to be close because both teams – I know the Red Sox are done with Seattle. I believe the Yankees are done with Seattle, right? They may have three more games.
Three more in Seattle. But the Yankees' second-half schedule is way easier than the Red Sox schedule, whereas Boston has played a lot of teams under 500 in the first half. It switches in the second half of the year, where I think the Yankees have the second lowest winning percentage of teams they'll face after the All-Star break. So you expect the Yankees to continue.
There's teams over 500, and then there's good teams. There's a difference right now. There's more good teams in the American League. There's the Red Sox, the Yankees, the Mariners, and the Astros. Cleveland, I know they're leading the division. They suck. So the division still should be close when these teams meet again, and odds are they're going to meet in the playoffs. So the concern here is, at least from the Red Sox point of view, if David Price can't beat the Yankees, what are you doing when you go and face them? You can only pitch Chris Sale once. What's the rest of the rotation? I can't imagine there's anybody else in the Red Sox rotation that Yankees fans are afraid of outside of Sale. And this weekend, at least from a Red Sox point of view now, there's a legitimate level of concern that, you know, okay, here we go again. The Red Sox are going to be a regular season wagon. They beat up on bad teams, and they're going to get to the playoffs and get bounced in the first round, because they only beat good teams. They don't beat great teams. And I'd imagine, and Jake, you can speak to this, but from the Yankees' point of view, is okay. It doesn't matter what happens with the Red Sox, because we know if we get them in October, we can win that series. We might lose to Chris Sale. We might lose game one, but then we get David Price in game two, maybe Drew Effing Pomeranz in game three. I would not be concerned in the slightest as a Yankees fan right now about facing the Red Sox, either in those series in September or in the playoffs.
I don't think there's a concern with the Red Sox, because I think the general consensus here in New York is that the Yankees, give it time, will ultimately win this division. They're the better team. However, in order for the Yankees to win the division, which has got to be the goal, because you don't want to be playing in that wild card game, even if the Yankees feel good against Boston, you don't want to win 105 games and have your season on the line in a one-game scenario where anything can happen. So the Yankees got to win this division. You know, both teams are trying to win this division. So any move they make is not just to help their chances in the postseason. It's to try and lock up the AL East. I think the Yankee perspective on this weekend is the Yankees have three reliable arms. They know what they have in Severino. He's one of the great pitchers now in baseball and has the lowest ERA in the AL. And has the most wins in the AL. He's been great. I mean, he's been as good as he was last year. The fact that he has been this good already and taken a significant step from where he was last year, I mean, he's been incredible. He's been the unquestioned ace of this team. But you know what you have in CC? We saw it in a big spot on Friday. In a big game, there was nobody you want on the mound more in a Yankee uniform than CC. I don't care how old he is. He will find a way to give you five or six solid innings and give you a chance. And Tanaka proved last year when he was the Yankees' best pitcher in the playoffs that he rises to the occasion as well. So the Yankees' goal the rest of the way is to find another starter that can come in and eat innings and take away the need for Sonny Gray to do anything other than be a fifth starter. The starter you require, you're trying to bring in that guy to be your fourth guy in this rotation. It could be a Cole Hamels type. It could be a Jay Happ. I don't think they're going to get that true ace, but with how good the Yankees' bullpen is and how strong their lineup is, that's what the Yankees are ultimately looking for. They're looking for that one reliable arm that could come in and help them win this division, because you're right, they don't fear the Red Sox in the sense that they think they're just as good as them, but if they want to solidify the division and solidify their playoff rotation, they're still looking for that one more starter.
And it's interesting that you mentioned that. A couple of things there that I think really kind of display what's going on right now in the Red Sox-Yankees rivalry. You mentioned CeCe Sabathia. And yeah, he has been that guy that he's not going to come out. It's not like Chris Sale. You know, you're going to get some dominant performance every night. But yeah, I feel like every time I look at the box score, when he pitches, he gives them 5-6 innings, keeps them in the game. The Red Sox don't have that guy. They've had him in the past when they've won, whether it was Jake Peavy, John Lackey, that seasoned veteran that you knew no matter what the stage, you would go out and at least get the game to your bullpen still in hand. Some people thought that would be Rick Porcello this year. He's been that guy some nights, other nights he's been terrible, but that's the whole thing. That Sabathia role, that seasoned veteran kind of, if you're a slump stopping role, the Red Sox don't have that. Now, yeah, the Yankees do need to go get another pitcher. Severino's kind of sale. They do have Sabathia. Tanaka's kind of fit in that role too, but the Red Sox obviously need another pitcher as well. They may need multiple pitchers, but I feel like what it's going to come down to, what the division could come down to, and it's silly to think that with these two teams, as good as they are, the division could come down to this, but we've seen this be the case. As we get close and close to the deadline, doesn't look like there's going to be a lot of starting pitchers available. So you could see it coming down to there may be one guy, and it's the Red Sox and the Yankees both bidding for him. And that's really where I get concerned, because I'm not sure the Red Sox have the ammunition the Yankees have to go get that guy. The Red Sox also have other needs. They need an arm. They may need another outfielder. But that's kind of where I'm nervous here. More so than the head-to-head is, I do feel like the Yankees need another arm to really win the division, but the Red Sox need another arm as well. And there may only be one guy available. It may be, okay, this is the guy, whether it is Hamels, whether it is Happ, whether it's Matt Harvey, the news today that Cincinnati may want to shop him, whoever that guy is.
You could have Matt Harvey, believe me.
I would take Matt Harvey. He's been okay in Cincinnati.
But he's pitching with no pressure. And I mean, here's the reality. The big talk in New York for months has been, well, would the Yankees and Mets make a deal for DeGrom? That will never happen. Those two sides are not going to be able to work out a deal.
Division but, over if that happens.
Right. I mean, it would be, you know, the ultimate move for the Yankees if they could do it, and they would be able to do it without having to give up Gleyber Torres. I think every Yankee fan would be on board. But it's just not going to happen because Mets ownership wouldn't allow that type of move to happen with the crosstown team like the Yankees. But for the Red Sox, maybe DeGrom's a possibility. But, you know, you were just talking about it. We don't know. I don't know the Boston farm system, but everything I hear
is that
it's been depleted. So if you're the Yankees.
Trader Dave just dished all the prospects out for relievers who are all getting Tommy John.
Sure,
now Tyler Thornburg's on the DL. Carson Smith's on the DL. We don't have any of our top prospects. We don't have Travis. I could go into a rant, but there's nobody to trade.
Right.
They can't get DeGrom unless they trade Devers, which they won't do. There's nobody they can move together.
Exactly. So it's going to come down to Cole Hamels and probably Jay Happ as the two guys that are available that either side could make a move for. And I trust Brian Cashman to make that move because, A, he always has. B, the Yankees purposely stayed under the luxury threshold to be able to make a move come July and get that pitcher they need. And they also have one of the best farm systems in all of baseball to wheel and deal from. So the Yankees are in a perfect spot to get the guy that they want. And if the difference in winning the division or not is bringing in Cole Hamels to be your fourth arm down the stretch, you know, that could be the winning move they make to wrap up this division and put themselves in a situation where with their bullpen and their lineup, you now have your ace in Severino and three reliable arms in Tanaka, CeCe Sabathia, and Cole Hamels, or Jay Happ, to be that missing piece to give the Yankees the best chance to win a title.
So, okay, literally everything Jake just said, rewind and listen to it after I say this, because I do not trust Dave Dombrowski to go out and get the guy. They do not have the farm system. They do not have the pieces to go out and get him. If Cole Hamels is the guy to make the difference in the division, I don't trust the Red Sox to recognize that, make that move. And because they have so many issues in their bullpen, in their lineup, not making the move could ultimately be the fatal flaw. It really is two sides of a coin, Jake, and we'll leave it there because we do have a lot else to get to. 4th of July weekend, sports did not let us off the hook. A lot going on. NBA free agency opened last night. Obviously, a lot to touch on there. We'll be right back. This is Calling It, powered by CLNS.
Calling It is brought to you by American Broadcast Coaches, training the next generation of media talent and communicators. For more information, check out AmericanBroadcastCoaches.com.
We've been on the run, driving in the sun, looking out for number one. California, here we come.
Welcome back to Calling It. Alex Barth with you. Jake Asman in for Alex Lebowitz today from the Asman and Budick Show on Sports on the Go One in New York. Here's some common ground, Jake, after we ended that last segment with the ultimate disagreement, not necessarily an argument, but luxury tax, prospects, all of it with the Red Sox and Yankees.
Total opposites.
Well, we're on the same page here. Neither of our teams got LeBron. I don't know if the Knicks were in on it. I don't understand how they weren't. But he's going to LA, LeBron's going west, and here we go. The East is wide open. It's the Celtics East to lose. Celtics fans have to feel good about this. I think we all knew it was coming. I don't get why everybody acted so surprised when the LeBron signing was announced yesterday, because I think we all knew this was going to happen. But here we go in the East now. It's the Celtics. And then, I mean, who else? It could be the Sixers. I don't really think that highly of that team. I think they're due for a step back. Milwaukee, we'll see what kind of steps Giannis takes. But this is – let's start in the East, Jake, before we get into the West. This, it's really going to be interesting now because there is a black hole after the Celtics. I don't think anybody else is close. Philly fans, at Real Alex Barth on Twitter, you can let me hear it. Nobody else is close to the Celtics.
You know, I think it's funny what you said, how everyone was acting so surprised by it. You know, I think it's one of those things where – until you actually see it happen, it's like just been something we've been hearing about ad nauseum. And then to actually see it, even though we all expected it, I think maybe that's where the surprise comes from. It will be weird, I'm sure, to watch him put on a Laker uniform.
Oh, yeah.
But I can't sit here and say that it's that surprising. I agree with you. But, you know, to your point about the East, you know, my first thought after LeBron signed with the Lakers after it came out last night, you know, right in the middle of the first inning of Yankee Red Sox, of course, I'm sure ESPN was just thrilled that they couldn't go right to, you know, nonstop LeBron coverage. But anyway,
they cut into the game with it.
Yeah, yes, they did. They were dying to talk about LeBron till, you know, till their heads exploded. ESPN. That all being said, I think it clearly opens up the Eastern Conference and makes the Celtics the odds on favorite to go to the NBA Finals. Now, I mean, you could look at a team like the Sixers, and we'll see what they do with their now salary cap room to add a player. Is that player maybe a trade for Kawhi Leonard? Is that player, you know, I don't know, you know, bringing back J.J. Redick. We'll see what they end up doing. But, you know, you look in the Eastern Conference, the Celtics got to Game 7 a year ago without Kyrie, without Hayward. You get another year of their young players to develop. I think it's clearly the Celtics. And then maybe you make an argument for the Sixers, the Raptors. We'll see what the Bucks and Wizards are. But, you know, the big winner in all of this has got to be the Celtics. You know, every Celtics fan has got to be ecstatic that LeBron, you know, who's been just the king of the East for the last 8 years going to the finals, is now not even in your conference. I think it's a great day for every Celtic fan, for sure.
Well, and now the question becomes, who is that second team? Is it the Raptors, which it's not? Is it the Sixers? Is it the Wizards? I see people now on Twitter saying that overnight John Wall became the best player in the Eastern Conference. I don't even know if he's the best player on his own team.
I think Kyrie Irving is the best player in the East now. I think it's either Irving, Embiid, or a Greek Freak. You pick who you want. I would probably take Irving because it's a point guard-driven league, and I've seen Kyrie Irving in big spots be the best player on the court. I mean, this is a guy that hit a shot to win an NBA championship. You want him with the ball late in the game.
I would go Giannis. I think he passes Kyrie this year. And I mean, the injury issues factor into that too, and that we don't know if Kyrie's going to play 82 games. But I'm trying to remember, and maybe it's the West a couple years ago. I'm trying to remember the last time an entire conference was this bad, really, in any sport. I mean, you've had the AFC in football be kind of pitiful for a couple of years, but you always had the Patriots. The Steelers were always good. There was normally a third team in there. It was at least a little competitive. You go back, the National League a couple of years ago wasn't great in the MLB, but yes, the Celtics are good. But are the Celtics as good as they were last year? In any other year, are they Eastern Conference favorites? Now, they do have Hayward coming back. They do have Kyrie coming back. It's not to say they're not a good team. But where do you see them in the West? Third? Fourth?
Third or fourth? I don't think they're better than the Rockets, and I don't think they're better than the
Warriors. They're not better than the Rockets. They're not better than Golden State.
Yeah, so they're probably maybe the third, depending on what the Lakers do from here, because I don't think their roster's complete yet, obviously.
Right.
So depending on who they add with LeBron either now or at the trade deadline, is it Kawhi Leonard? Can they work that out? Could it maybe be, you know, Boogie Cousins? But I think you're right in the sense that the East is so weak. But you know what? No complaints from anyone in the East that's had to deal with LeBron for the last 8 years.
No.
Now the wide open window. It's like the Eastern Conference the year that Michael Jordan retired and the Knicks actually were able to get to an NBA Finals for the first time, you know, since the 70s. So you know, you look at the landscape of the NBA, it certainly changes, but I don't think LeBron joining the Lakers changes anything as far as who the favorites coming out of the West are. I still think Houston's better, and I still think, without a doubt, the Warriors are the prohibitive favorite to repeat for the third straight year because I think they're better than any team in the East, and I just think even with LeBron going to the Lakers, that's not enough to get the Lakers past the Golden State Warriors. I think instead of losing to them in the finals, LeBron will either lose to them in the conference finals or lose to them in the second round.
So, I mean, I'll say this. I think, you know, they're not at the same level as Golden State and Houston. I wouldn't sleep on Oklahoma City either. I may even, as it is right now, and like you said, the Lakers will probably make moves. I might put Oklahoma City ahead of the Lakers, at least for right now. I think now that they have Paul George locked up, they know he'll be there long term. They can be a bit more aggressive. They can go out and get the next guy. They do have, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe they have Carmelo Anthony's contract coming off the books. So that will give them some room to move around. So
the
West is going to be interesting.
Yeah, I agree. And the Melo situation is interesting because he signed for one more year. Like he's on the book. This is his last year of the deal. They're trying to move on from him though. And he refused to opt out. I mean, who would? He was not going to get $27 million in the open market. He's a washed player at this point, but they're kind of stuck with Carmelo. If they could somehow, you know, stretch him out or get someone to take on that expiring contract and clear up some salary cap space,
the Lakers,
then I would agree with you, but do the Lakers even want Carmelo? Like, if you watch Carmelo Anthony at this point, he's no longer scoring 30 points per game to make up for the fact that he really doesn't give you anything else other than, you know, he's a great scorer. He doesn't play great defense. He's not a great team player in a sense that him being on the court doesn't make other guys around him better, like it does with LeBron, for example, or Steph Curry. So I think at this point, they're kind of just stuck with Melo. So I put the Thunder kind of in the mix in the West, but I don't think they're better than Houston. I don't think they're better than even now LeBron with the Lakers. I wouldn't take the Thunder over them because, I mean, what have they ever really done in the playoffs with Westbrook? Last year they lost to the Jazz. I mean, that was horrible.
Does it matter, though, if the Lakers want Melo, or does it only matter if LeBron wants Melo? And I could see LeBron because it's 1 year, and then they get the money on the books. So you trade for him for the 1 year, then that money's off the books, and then you bring in Kawhi in free agency next year. And they probably wouldn't have to give up much to get him. I could see LeBron. I mean, that's trades like that. And let's be honest, LeBron's making all the personnel decisions wherever he is. It doesn't matter that he's in LA. It doesn't matter Magic is there. Genie Buss, it doesn't matter. LeBron's making the decisions. That's how trades like that are how he got himself into trouble in Cleveland. Those short-sighted, bringing his friends on bad deal trades are the reason he's not playing in Cleveland anymore. It's the reason he almost lost to the Celtics. It's the reason he almost lost to Indiana in the playoffs.
Sure.
So And the one other thing is, look, I think Golden State and Houston are the two best teams in the West? Absolutely. But we know how the NBA works. Do you think that Adam Silver is going to pass up an opportunity for a Celtics-Lakers, LeBron versus Boston NBA Finals? Do you really think the NBA will pass up on that?
Listen, that's the matchup everyone wants to see. Melo has no value, though, at this point. And unless he was willing to play – you know, take half the money he's making now and go elsewhere, it's just not realistic because Carmelo has always tried to make the most money possible. He's been one of the smartest NBA players and he's always taken the most money financially. I don't know. I just think at this point, LeBron going to the Lakers sounds great, but unless they add another piece to play with him this year, I think the long-term move is maybe next year when other guys become available, like Kevin Durant, Klay Thompson, Kyrie Irving, even though I don't think that would happen, the list of free agents for next year is way better. You know, we really didn't talk about Kawhi yet. We mentioned it, but you know, if the Lakers could pull that deal off, it changes everything. But everything you read, everything you're hearing, is that the Spurs don't want to deal him to LA, and that LA's salary cap flexibility after they signed Caldwell Pope last night and they brought in Lance Stephenson and JaVale McGee, it makes it that much harder for them to wheel and deal and make that kind of move. So I think LeBron being in LA is cool, and it's a different narrative that, you know, the Eastern Conference is wide open. I think LeBron giving them the 4-year commitment seems to indicate to me that he understands that it's going to take probably a 2-year process until there's a team in place that's ready to win a title.
We will see how much the league helps LeBron out. What has it been, 9 years since LeBron wasn't in the finals?
2009 was the last time he was not in there.
So 9 years since LeBron wasn't in the finals. It will be the first time he's not in the finals from the Eastern Conference. We know that. There'll be a new Eastern Conference champion, but lots to happen between now and then. We had another big free agency signing over the weekend. We'll get to that on the other side, plus some Calling It Power rankings. You're listening to Calling It Powered by CLNS. Don't go anywhere.
Calling It is brought to you by American Broadcast Coaches, training the next generation of media talent and communicators. For more information, check out AmericanBroadcastCoaches.com.
Welcome back to Calling It, Alex Barth. We got Jake Asman in for Alex Lebowitz, and it is fitting because Jake Asman, like very few people actually, is an Islanders fan. It's tough to get one. We got one. My condolences, first off. And John Tavares, I'll just cede the floor to you.
It sucks. I mean, I'll be totally honest. I mean, this as an Islander fan, this guy was the first overall pick for this team in 2009. He has grown up in Islanders since he was 18. He has said repeatedly for the last 2 years he can't see himself playing anywhere else. He wants to be an Islander for life. He likes the direction the team is going in. And the team decided to finally you-know-what out of their new you-know-what and make competent, smart decisions in their front office and a head coach. They brought in one of the best hockey executives ever and Lou Lamoriello to be the new president of hockey operations. Then they pay $5 million a year to bring in Barry Trotz, the defending Stanley Cup champion head coach to the Capitals, to be their next head coach. I mentioned the arena situation, but they finally will have their own arena back on Long Island within 2 years that got sorted out in December. And all that John Tavares has said is that he wants to be an Islander and can't see himself being anywhere else. And then he goes and signs elsewhere. And there are so many people to blame, starting with Gart Snow, the former GM of this team. Ownership, not the current ownership, but the previous ownership that never spent the money and put the necessary resources around Tavares and essentially wasted the last 9 years of his career. Only one playoff series win. You know, it's a tough pill to swallow. This was one of the best players in the history of the franchise, their best player since, you know, the dynasty players in the 1980s. And, you know, not only does he leave, but he leaves and you get nothing for him. You didn't trade him at the deadline because he asked not to be traded. They listened and, you know, it ends up biting them in the butt as he now leaves. And it just stinks. It stinks as an Islander fan that this guy was the face of the franchise and he walks away, you know, and you get nothing in return. And I was thinking about it. Out of all the teams I root for, this is the first free agent signing that really hurts, where a guy on a team I rooted for got up and left, not because the team didn't want him back, but because he wanted to go play somewhere else. So, you know, every Islander fan, everyone here on Long Island is very disappointed, and rightfully so. They feel as if, you know, their prized possession was just ripped away from them. And that's ultimately what happened here.
I will say this. I find it, and I mean, out here in Boston, following as I did, I find it hard to blame Tavares. He was there for 9 years. And until very recently, they didn't make an effort to really go and get to go and do anything for him. I mean, at that point, you know, you're putting duct tape on cracks and a dam, it feels like. And yeah, it's been a misrun organization for a long time. And I think this was a long time coming. Toronto being in the mix too. Once you put two and two together, it's where he's from. I'll say this from the Bruins' point of view. I think Boston would have given him the best chance to win right now. I think that was why Boston was in there. I think that the three real considerations for him were Boston, obviously going back to the Islanders, and of course Toronto. Boston gave him the best chance to win right now. Long Island, obviously he was there. He was with the Islanders. He was the franchise. But Toronto doesn't have the best chance to win right now, but he will have a great chance to win down the road. And if he wins a championship in his hometown, I mean, the opportunity to be the guy to bring a cup to the Leafs, there was no way any pitch was going to top that. I just think at that point he was gone.
It's true, but everything we heard from Tavares has led you to believe that he valued being here, that he wanted to be the face of the franchise for this team, play his whole career in one uniform. And you know, everything we heard from Tavares' camp was that he didn't really want to go to Toronto and be, you know, face the pressure of having to win and having to answer all the questions, being the face of the franchise, the guy coming home, that he was more of a low-key guy that enjoyed being kind of the low-key superstar here in New York. So it's just everything that we were told turned out to be completely false, and everything he said turned out to be completely false. I can't blame a guy for leaving and going home, But I can blame a guy for saying that he wants to stay, wants to stay, wants to stay. Tells the organization at the trade deadline this past year not to trade him, only to then leave. Like, he gave the Islanders no notice. He didn't do them any favors, and he leaves them in a horrible shape. I mean, you know, are they better prepared to handle this with Lou Lamoriello as their new GM? Absolutely. But we're talking about a top five player in the middle of his prime at age 27, getting up and walking away, and you got nothing in return. And what it did to Toronto, I mean, it made them the co-favorites to win the Cup in Vegas. So it just shows you the power of John Tavares taking his talents up north. It's a shame.
I do think people are a little too high on Toronto right now. Look, they'll probably win a couple of these there. I do believe that. Him, Austin Matthews. I mean, that team's going to be loaded, but it's going to take them a year or two to figure it all out. Then again, the Golden Knights almost won a cup this year, so we'll see. One more hockey thing I want to get into real quick, Jake, while we have you. Yaroslav Halak, former Islander, will be the backup goaltender for the Bruins this year because they let Anton Khudobin go over, I think it was $50,000. I don't know why. He was a great backup goaltender. That is going to come back and haunt them. I'll just put that out there. Like, they could have had Khudobin back. They let him go. Horrible, horrible decision from Don Sweeney. Just reeked of Peter Chiarelli. But now that we're stuck with Yaroslav Halak, Jake, what should Bruins fans expect?
Very inconsistent. If you get the good Halak, he's a starting goalie in the NHL. I mean, this guy has started playoff series before for the Islanders, and he's played well. He's had his moments. This past year was a disaster, though. The defense did him no favors. Part of the frustration, by the way, with the whole Tavares thing is that the Islanders were seventh in the NHL in goals last year. The problem was not offense. They had now had the reigning rookie of the year on their team in Matthew Barzal. You know, he looks like he's going to be a star. He had 80 points last year and won the Calder. You just look at Halak, though, in his career, he's either really good or really bad. He has his moments. I mean, I think at the right price, the Bruins didn't give up a whole lot to get him. Maybe he could play well for them in that situation. But the biggest reason why the Islanders probably lost Tavares was because Halak and Thomas Greiss, their two goalies, were horrible last year, and that just made everything worse. The Islanders had an offense that was good enough to be a playoff team last year. Their defense was just horrific.
Well, I mean, I'll say this in terms of inconsistency. If there's one thing we know about Tuukka Rask, he's inconsistent. So Bruins putting that, and that was the thing about Khudobin. You knew what you were going to get from him. And I say this all the time about hockey goaltenders. You could have two goalies that both average a 2.0 goals against average. But one of them, every other starts a shutout and then a four-goal game. So he shuts a team out, allows four goals. Shuts a team out, allows four goals. The other one is true to the two goals against average. He allows two goals every game and that's it. Give me goalie B in that situation because I want to know who my goaltender is and know what kind of team I need to build around him. In quarterback and quarterback, goaltender, and pitcher are the three positions in sports where consistency is more important than anything else. We've seen it from David Price. We've seen it from Tuukka Rask. Jake, you see, well, I guess the Jets quarterbacks are consistent. They're consistently bad. But bringing in an inconsistent goaltender to back up an inconsistent goaltender to me is concerning. All right, before we wrap it up, we did this for Thanksgiving on the show with Alex Lebowitz. We power ranked our top five Thanksgiving foods. So to close on this note, for everybody listening at their barbecues, we're going to do our top five barbecue foods for the 4th of July. Now, I know there's the debate of the definition barbecue versus cookout. If you're just doing burgers versus if you're doing everything, if it's like what is a barbecue? Is it barbecue like Southern Texas food? No, this is foods you can make on a grill or that would be present when you're making foods on a grill. Top five. Jake, we'll let you go first.
Oh, this is tough because I was just a little inside radio here. I was thrown into this, so I'm putting together my list to the best I can. And I thank you for the clarification on what we were breaking down because I was indeed confused if we were talking, you know, like Texas barbecue, if we're just talking, you know, you're having some friends over and you're watching, you know, you're watching the game or you're sitting outside by a pool and you're just barbecuing. So those are the type of foods I have here. So I would just give you my list. Now I know I have to rank them. So bear with me because I'm doing this on the fly here. So at number five, I am going to go with the hot dog, the classic American hot dog. You can't go wrong, whether it's Nathan's or Hebrew National.
Ketchup or mustard?
I am a big ketchup guy. However, I don't mind mustard. I do not mind mustard. Some people are like, oh, how dare you not put mustard on the hot dog? Well, take it easy. I like it. I just prefer ketchup a little bit more. All right. That is five. At number four, I'm going to go with a little watermelon here. All right. So you could have your choice of fruits and whatnot, but I feel like every barbecue, every cookout, you need to have some watermelon, especially on July 4th. So I'll put watermelon at number four as kind of like the side item that is part of the cookout and part of the barbecue. Now let's get to the good stuff. At number three.
Hit me with the meats, baby.
I am going to go with delicious, fantastic sausage that you could put on the barbecue. Who doesn't love a little sausage with their cookout? You can have it with any type of meal. Now, no one's saying that you're going to be healthy when you have a barbecue with me, but you're going to have a great time.
No.
And you're going to enjoy your food. So I'll go sausage at three.
The fact you put watermelon on there is way healthy. This is already way healthier than I expected this to be.
I was going to throw like a chocolate cake or like an ice cream thing, but I was like, we'll go American classics and we'll go with watermelon. Okay. I'll leave those for you if you're going down that path. At number two, at number two, I am going to go with the cheeseburger. Now, I'm not talking about, you know, you get just like, you know, any type of burger from your local deli or whatnot. We're going to talk Bubba Burgers here. If you're going to have a barbecue, you want the best of the best, the cheese ingrained into the patty. That's what it's all about. So give me the Bubba Burger at number two. And at number one, I actually had it this past weekend. It's a bit outside the box. I don't know how common it is at your cookouts, Alex. But what me and my friends always do is we get these chicken skewers that go on these sticks and we barbecue those in different flavors. You could have barbecue. You could have buffalo. You could have just regular chicken. You name the flavor. They make them in skewer form. You put them up on the grill, and it is tremendous with the different variety that you could have as part of the cookout. So that would be my five. It'd be hot dogs, watermelon, sausage, the cheeseburger, and the chicken skewers.
I am familiar with the chicken skewers. I am a fan of the chicken skewers. I went a little more red meat here, but I started with the dessert. Like you said, I didn't go that healthy. I went cake, chocolate cake, cupcakes, whatever it is. There's always some sort of cake. You got the red, white, and blue funfetti on it around this time of year. So I'll go cake at number five. Number four, this is kind of similar to your number one, beer can chicken. I've only had it once, but it's excellent and it's fun as hell to make. That is when you take a full bird. Put the beer can, you stick it right up the beer can chute, and you grill the chicken like that. You get that nice kind of beer flavor in it. Number three, I went ribs. Little messy. It might take some points off, but can't go wrong. Beef or pork. Dig into some ribs. Can't get much better than that. You know, you eat some ribs, you go play catch, you get the barbecue sauce all over the baseball. It's a classic. Number two. Had to go with the hamburger, of course, hamburger or cheeseburger. But you're right, Jake. You can't get those like thin, frozen, you know, assembly line made burgers. They have something up in Boston. They're called pub burgers. They sell them at Shaw's supermarkets. It's a quarter pound burger. It takes about 12 minutes to grill because it's so thick. It's about half an inch thick, but those things are juicy as hell. And at number one, steak tips. All about the steak tips. That's got to be my number one. There are our top five barbecue food power rankings. What'd you think? Let us know on Twitter at Calling It Podcast. That will do it for us this week. I'd like to thank Jake for coming on and co-hosting. We'll see if Alex Lebowitz wants to be back next week, Jake.
Well, I'll tell you what, Alex. It was an absolute pleasure. And I'm glad you brought up the steak tips because that is something that I was deciding. It was tough to decide which meats I wanted to throw on there, but you can't go wrong with chicken steak. You can have a barbecue. You got to go all out. And I'll tell you what about Alex. He's a great barbecuer. He's a great fry cook. So hopefully when we're at the Cape in a few weeks on a nice little weekend getaway, we can see Alex Lebowitz in action. And maybe we'll do a live call in it of him barbecuing.
I've actually got to talk to you about that off the air. So for the fans who are listening, I'll actually kind of drop a tease here. Those of you know, Lebowitz and I are friends from college. Jake went to college with us as well. We'll all be getting together in a couple weeks. There will be something Calling It related possibly done around that, but you'll have to be following us on Twitter to see that at Calling It Podcast. We're powered by CLNS Media. Check us out online, clnsmedia.com. Follow them on Twitter at CLNS Media. For Jake Asman, I'm Alex Barth. We'll be back next week. Thanks for listening to Calling It, powered by CLNS.